Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the After Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
That is a fact, and you can't take that back. It's on the internet, which means it's alive forever.
So, hey, guys, if you've got a question, you've got something you want to, your creative question, anything like that, you want us to try to answer it, send it to Neshcom, N-E-S-H-C-O-M, at Gmail. Subject line, After Things, and Bryce, a producer of our show here, will make sure it gets to our attention, and we'll do our best to answer it on the show. Again, neshcom at gmail.com. Just put After Things in the subject line so he doesn't get buried in an avalanche of everything else, and we'll do our best. Right now, Bry, we're going to jump into our first question here. And this is a good one. It's a good one. This is from Ken. He says, hello, After Things. I've publicly taken up a quest to become an extra on the new Star Trek series set to begin filming near me this fall. I'm also chronicling this journey on my podcast, Today's Tea with Kenny P. Up to this point, all I can report on is having my emails ignored by casting agents. Since you know a lot more about how television works, have you got any other ideas? I'll gladly accept either sensible ideas using proper channels and procedures, as well as stupid, potentially humiliating ideas that might make a compelling podcast. Also, if you do talk about this on After Things, I take your suggestion account. Is it cool if I potentially include a clip or two in my own podcast? Sure,
Brian. Yeah, cool with that? Start with the last part. Sure. Yeah. No. Also, superimpose our faces on hardcore pornography. We don't care. Are we not on the same page on that?
I don't know. I mean, are we talking like Star Trek slash?
Well, especially duh.
Yeah, I think.
I mean, come on.
Yeah. I assume when you say you live near the production, I believe it's going to be shot in Toronto, that you live near there. Because if you're not in Toronto, problem number one. Here's the way casting agents work. And I would be surprised at this point if they've even – I don't know when they're set to shoot production, begin production on this show. I don't even know if the scripts are finished, having been finished writing yet. But this is a show very, very early on in production. So according to here, fourth quarter of 2016. So end of this year is when they're going to start production. So they're finishing scripts. They may have had some preliminary discussions with casting agents. They're probably going to work with some of the standards there in the Toronto area. But if you write a letter to a casting agent and say, I really want to be an extra on Star Trek, you know what they're going to do? They're going to make sure you're not an extra on Star Trek. Because the last thing they want is to put somebody on set who is a fan that could interfere with production. So, number one. Step number one, don't write a letter to the casting agents telling them you want to be on Star Trek as an extra.
Dude, that's actually a really good point. Step two is have a reason outside of this production, outside of your love of Star Trek, why they should trust you. Because understand, this person is not in the wish-granting business. This person is not in the day-making business. This person is in the business of delivering people who will show up, hit their mark, do their job on time every time. And so the best, the heuristic they use is how many other times is this person extra'd on what?
Exactly. So what you need to do now is, and you already emailed them. That was you should have talked to us first. I would not have recommended doing that. But you've done that. Fine. This is fine. What you need to do now is that casting agents, there's what they talk to, what they don't say, and then there's what goes on behind the scenes. I don't know if anybody's even started, has been hired yet to cast for background, to cast for extras. You call people to do extras or background yet. I don't even know if the casting procedure, they may not have hired a casting agency yet, which would be to your best advantage, because you would rather they have thrown this away than them to say, not this guy. And that happens. I've worked in all sides of this. When I was a magician and I had downtime, I used to work as an extra, as a producer. I've had to hire casting agents and casting departments to cast people. And when you are worried or somebody seems like you don't want them there, a blogger or a podcaster who's going to talk about the production, oh my God, absolutely not. They do not want you there, okay?
That's now, nothing but a liability. You have to figure out to be...
If you're talking about going through the casting side, what you need to do, exactly what Brian said, is get casting work now. Start working as background stuff in Toronto. Get in, get listed there. Don't say Star Trek. Don't say you're a fan. Don't say anything. And start actively working as doing that.
Well, and again, I can't emphasize this enough. You are thinking, oh, I love this thing, will help you get the job. The moment you admit you love the thing, the less interested they're going to be in you being within 100 yards of this thing.
When I was a kid, when I was a teenager, David Copperfield was shooting a TV special in my hometown in Fort Lauderdale. And I had offered to say, hey, I'd love to work on this, whatever. At that point, the last thing they wanted was a bunch of magicians working backstage.
This is totally apocryphal, and I don't know that it's true. And we have a lot of friends who work on the Copperfield show, but I've heard from other people that when they're selecting volunteers for certain things, one of the standard questions they'll ask is, also, do you happen to be a magician? And if they say yes, then it's like they don't know if you're a competing illusionist trying to figure out how his stuff goes. They don't know if you're just getting started in a blabbermouth and this is going to cause trouble. The only thing they know is you sound like trouble. So we're not going to have you on this.
Yeah, they don't. And also, like, you could. Yeah, exactly. So I got hired, though, because, and this is before I got to know David and all that. But like back then, I got hired because I had actually worked as a production assistant on non-magic productions. I had worked for other stuff in Fort Lauderdale for some other stuff shot there. And my name, for some reason, came up through, hey, we need PAs. And they said, oh, we know a guy who's a production assistant, is on PA work and all that. I show up and like, oh, you're a magician. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. But you're doing PA work. I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm PA. I'm like, oh, okay. Totally cool. That was cool because I was actually had been a PA and I knew what it meant to be a PA. And I wasn't like, hey, I'm a magician too, you know? So that's how I got hired there. Your situation here, one is build up a background as and build get some extra work, okay? When you find out who the casting director is going to be hiring, you know, extras for that, you can be persistent as a person looking for work. But if you are adamant about trying to get on that set, you're the last person they want. They will go out of the way to avoid doing it. Another way, if you're committed to talking about this and your efforts to doing this, your best course of action will not be the casting directors will have not done their job if they let you on that set. The other way is to get hold of PR for CBS and for the production, whoever's doing production PR on this, because they want to make a good impression locally. They want to make a good impression. They want to show the local community how much value they're bringing, whatever. Find out who's doing who their set publicist is. Find out the set publicist. Talk to them. Don't be crazy. What are things you can do? What are things? And look to see who's already actively, what productions by CBS or whatever are in Toronto. Look to see who's already been a consistent publicist through there before. Reach out to them. Say, hey, I represent, you know, some local fans and stuff of this. We're so excited about this production. We're so excited about the production being here, et cetera. What can we do to help promote? What else can we do to get out there? You know, are you having problems with locations and stuff? Do you want us, what can we do to talk about how great this is for the community? Get on their good side that way and facilitate the production, but do that through the publicist.
Yeah. The only difficulty on that second scene is I don't know what the benefit is for them, right? Like, the best way to get there, is to clearly spell out a benefit to them. Like, hey,
well, when you're a production and you need to shoot around in a city and all this, do other location stuff, you have to get sign on and permission to do that. You have to get approval to do that. And if you're a bad production, some productions have good reputations, some productions have bad reputations. And if you're set, part of what the set publicist's job is just to encourage a good reputation. They want, because if people are, if they're shutting, oh yeah, we're going to be shutting down the Civic Center because they want to shoot this new Star Trek thing and people don't like the production because of the traffic and because everything's being caused by that, it's problematic. And when they want to get permits, they have to jump through more hoops.
Yes. Yes. I guess what I'm saying is, when it comes to just being an extra, you're able to promise nothing but benefit because everybody's got problems. And what they want to do is get that problem out of their face in the easiest way possible. That's why whenever you call a phone queue, you'll know, like, if you ask, like, hey, can I do blank? The easiest thing that they could do to get you out of their face and go, get back to, you know, playing Angry Birds is to say no. But if you phrase it differently and saying, hey, here's my situation. Let me explain what I'm up to. Here's what we're hoping to accomplish. Here's what I'm going to do if it doesn't work, blah, 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 blah. And if you could frame it in such a way where it's like, well, of all these things on the menu, the one that bothers me the least and gets you out of my face the easiest is to say, yeah, sure, you could be an extra in the background of Star Trek, then that's how you want to frame everything for
me. I would totally disagree. Totally disagree.
Well, first of all, in which context are you talking for? I'm not
working
talking
with
about
the publisher. I would say the only two ways in that would, from this point of view that I see, other than if you have some high level connection to the producers, if you're trying to get in through the casting agencies, don't appear to be a threat or nut or anything like that at all, but saying I'm a Star Trek fan is the clearest way to get pegged. Is that if you're trying to get through the publicist, what the publicist's job is on the location, publicist's job is to increase the goodwill for the production, is to make sure that all the people, the businesses, and everybody else in the community that are going to be impacted by it are happy that the production is there. Because when they have to cut off traffic and they have to shoot externally and they have to shut down locations or take over parks and do this stuff, they don't want bad press in the newspaper because that makes it harder and more expensive to do what they're doing. Their
sure.
job is to.
I think you're assuming a version of this that I didn't mean to represent. I'm thinking in terms of get a hold of somebody and say, who is the person, like, rather than, you know, sending a resume labeled attention talent booker or attention extra caster or whatever. Instead, if you got somebody who is a real person and you could say, hey, my name is so-and-so, here's the background I've got. I'm trying to track down the person who's in charge of casting for extras for blankety blank. Don't ask, do you know who that person is? Because that's an easy, you know, like, no. Make it clear that they've got two choices. Either they could keep talking to you or they could give you the name of the person who's in charge of casting. That's what I'm saying, is frame everything so that the easier of the two solutions is always to give you what you want.
Yeah, I mean, finding out the casting director wouldn't be hard at all. I mean, that'll be listed. I mean, you'll know that if you're in the community and you're just follow the trades, you'll know who the casting director is for that.
Okay, well, that is part of the puzzle. Then in that case, then your next thing becomes to find out what that casting director is looking for, or to try to arrange a meeting for that casting director. The point is along the journey, there's going to be dozens, if not hundreds, of interactions, each of which they will have a choice to either blow you off or to give you what you want. Mm-hmm. I'm saying at each of those individual branches, make it so that the easier solution is to give you what you want.
Sure. Absolutely. Just don't raise. And again, and to add to that, like, don't raise red flags.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're, I'm a super fan, I want to be on the set, red flag.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you have on some sets, you know, their absolute thing is if you say, oh, I'm a big fan of this actor or whatever, nope, you're out. You know, if I'm a big fan of this franchise, nope, you're out, because it's part of it too is if you don't have any extra experience,
understand,
it is not fun. It is not fun.
Well, and that's the real rub here is the moment somebody says, I'm a real fan of blank, what they're saying is they're saying, I have an expectation and I'm hoping for a thing that has nothing to do with your actual job. I am hoping for, I have a fantasy of getting to hang out and talk to so-and-so, and that is not something anybody can afford to put their talent in a position to have to do.
And I'll give you an example of like how, when it works, when I've worked with a casting director and we're pulling people in to put them on a set, you have your holding area where you have all of your background, and again, they don't even call you extras, they call you background, right? And you have 40 or 50 people sitting there in chairs waiting. When the casting director or whoever's going to be setting the scene or whatever walks through with the producer or the walk through there, you'll get some people all of a sudden sit up, perfect posture, and like, you know, like smile and make them sure that they look like their composition. When really what they're trying to do is they want to figure out, we've got a restaurant, we got to put people at tables, and what we don't want is somebody who's actually trying to attract attention for themselves. The person who's sitting there quietly, reading, minding their own business or whatever, that's who they pull. That's who they go grab. The person who does not stand out. You know, your job is not to be taller than the talent. Your job is not to be anything other than just your prop, and people who try hard not to do that. So I could predict, it was funny because like I'd be there, you know, I could predict, I'm like, oh, they're not going to do her. They're going to go grab for her and him because they're average looking, they're well-dressed and they're painting. They're just indifferent. They've done this before. They look like they're used to sitting at a table forever. They're not trying to preen for the people coming through.
Right. Right. Hold on. I got to sneeze.
Breaking. Brian just sneezed. Breaking. Brian sneezed again.
I swear, I'm fine. By the way, full disclosure, I didn't mention this on Weird Things, but today I seem to be under the weather, but there's some kind of magic that occurs when you know you have a gig where there's a brief window where the body's like someone in the brain said, hey man, I don't care what strings you have to pull, but down there, I need the rest of the body to be on point. He's got to deliver the goods. And then the body says, I can give you an hour. He's like, I'll need two. He's like, yeah. I could guarantee you an hour. And here we are 90 minutes in. And I'm just
yeah, I wouldn't know if you hadn't pointed out. And I did offer to Brian, Bryce and I could do the show. Like Bryce, call Bryce up, give him his chance.
Well, and you know what? And actually, this is actually a very after things thing, because there is some kind of magic when you know that you cannot afford to be sick. Your body will rally to make stuff happen. Well, and it's like in specifically, you had mentioned like, oh, me and Bryce could do everything. And the idea, I would be fine with that if it wasn't happening in my house. And the idea of me sleeping just 6 feet away, listening to you guys working hard while I was just wallowing, I was
working
like, I can't do that.
Hard.
But also, I probably wouldn't come in if it's a one-on-one call with Andrew at that point. Just do it from my house.
Fair enough.
Gentlemen, we hope that's helpful, Ken. Good luck on this. Keep us updated on how this works with that. Again, don't scare them off. Start working his background now so you have that experience, because that'll
also
be the number one.
I would say conversely, don't be afraid to be interesting. Two of my biggest breakout national television appearances happened because I bought $300 worth of atomic fireballs and stuff, videotapes in them, and sent them all across the country saying, think these are hot, try eating fire. And that definitely grabbed attention. And even though the Tonight Show originally called just to say, hey, very creative to get us your videotape, you're too weird for us. I'm like, okay, cool. And then 2 months later, they called and they're like, not that we need you, but we might need you. And then they did that for a year, and then finally it came on the show, and all of that was traced back to doing something interesting that was not an inconvenience, but rather a blessing for them.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. Just don't make it about Star Trek. Don't put in the, you know, there and hint if you're casting for, because that will be, if they get to know you and they like you, and then they know that you're, if you're a good, reliable person they cast, and then they know, oh, and he's a Star Trek fan, then they will do it. If you worked on other productions, and then they know if you have a relationship with the casting agents, it's a totally different thing. But when they're going to have their choice of anybody in the world, and their goal is to avoid what could be a problem.
Right.
And already you've sent up all the flags for that. So, but like I said, and they're going to probably do in a Star Trek omaze. They're going to do a lot to integrate fans into this in the way that they can, in a safe way they can do it. You know, they're going to figure out ways to do that and be aware of that. But if you want to bypass that and make sure that you have your better chance, start working as an extra now.
Right.
So this is from Fitz. It says, I'm starting a newsletter. I know the direction I want to go with. I also have my first interview for it. I'm not going to name drop, but my question is, how do you get to the reader? I want my newsletter to be on tech gaming, but also the streaming world of podcasters and YouTubers. So far, I'm working on my mission and goal statements and how to generate the website. Brian and Eshcom know who I have an interview with, being I reached out to them for information for the article, but we know Schwid never checks his email. LMFAO. JK, any insight would be great. Step number one. Have somebody proofread your newsletter.
Yeah. if you're going to do a newsletter, right?
I don't even mean, but need to step up that game. I know we write things really, really fast, but this is a question.
What is the question? Because he's right. I did get as far as seeing that he had an interview, but in fact, I'll just say Fitz. I, at this point, understand I get 200 to 300 emails per day. I definitely saw your email. I saw that it was requesting something of me, but it was too long for me to read at that moment. And I was like, okay, he wants me to do a thing. I don't know what all I got was like, you wanted vague background information on a thing. It was not clear to me what I could do. And then my children started screaming. So I turned my attention elsewhere.
So we'll answer his question in a second, but side note to Brian's
What
point.
Is his question? That's my question.
He wants to get to the reader. How does he get the reader? How does he get readers to it?
Okay.
So, but first, if you want an answer from somebody, a busy guy like Brian, you know, or a Bryce guy, or maybe me, a one-sentence question, one-sentence kind of thing, and have an idea of what you're asking for. If you're asking for, hey, can you write me a 500-word essay on blah, 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 blah? No. And I won't even reply to something like that, because it's like, It's like, oh God, this person has no idea what, you know, how little time I have to do the things I want to do.
The biggest thing is think in terms of not how valuable what you're asking is, not in terms of asking what it would mean to you, but only think in terms of one thing, how much time of this person am I asking of them? And so in that regard, I apologize, Fitz. The reason I didn't respond was because I just saw, I was like, this is a vaguely worded thing. This looks like a 10 to 15 minute situation. I don't have 10 to 15 minutes to dedicate to it. And if it's really important, he's going to reach out and clarify. Bye. And I just didn't get a chance to respond.
Yeah. Don't worry, Brian. It's not a referendum on you. That's the entire podcast is a referendum on you.
Yeah, yes.
So I'm going to say my advice to you, Fitz, first off, is like we all start there. We write the things, read through the stuff, have some read through, look for clarity. How do you make it shorter, shorter, shorter? There's a great quote is like, I would have sent you a shorter email if I had more time, or shorter letter if had I more time, because clarity is brevity. You know, shorten, dust, blankety, blank, blank, blank. So think about your newsletters in that context.
Speaking of which, I believe Fitz might be in the chat right now because it sounds like it's correct. He says, I just wanted to know what it's like to work with Murphy, and I wrote that email as fast as hell. Then in that case, give me permission, set me off the hook and say, hey, Brian, I'm doing an interview. Do you think you could write me one sentence on what it's like to work with Jason Murphy?
Yeah.
That's all you got to say. And it's like, that's something I could do right now. Beep, bop, boop, boop, and it's out.
And I understand, like say, and you know, so you just wrote that fast. Understood. But then that is our perception of that. That is if it wasn't worth carefully crafting a, you know, easily readable question, then it's not going to have this likely to get responded to, you know, and that's the thing is you got to say like, it's a half-assed thing. So if I'm getting a half-assed request, then I'm going to ignore it. You know, it's like, here's the thing. I'll just throw this out there. See if you're interested in, well, not if you're treating my time that. No,
I think it's a good way to segue into a universal concept of the heuristic, H-E-U-R-I-S-T-I-C. A heuristic is a mental shortcut that we use to try to evaluate the importance of things. For example, if there's a bunch of misspelling, for example, let's say this. If I sent an email to Andrew and it said, get paid, and paid was spelled P41D, and I said, for Viagra, and Viagra was spelled V1A. G-R-A-A-A, you do not have time to evaluate what the rest of the email says. Instead, you will rely on the heuristic that those kind of tricky misspellings mean only one thing. And what would that be, Andrew?
Well, I'm writing back yes if it's coming from
no,
you.
No, it's yeah. That it's spam and that it's not worth your time. That's what
Exactly. You know, and that's the thing is that it's the you know, if you want to get a response, concise, make sure that it's structured. Report. If I have to sit there and think of like, what does this person mean? And I've written those emails too that I read and I go back like, oh man, I jumbled together a bunch of things. So if it's not a picking on you, this is a thing we've all been there. Let me make that very, very, very clear. And I look at when I get responses from people and when I don't, if I write these, somebody I met, and I'm so excited about, and I list all these sort of things, da, 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 da. And I know that I don't know what time of day they got this thing, but the longer it is, the less likely I am to get a response. To his question, how do you guilt one? Create a great newsletter. Create a very concise, informative newsletter. Encourage people to share this with friends. Say like, hey, if you like this, forward this to a friend. Very easy. One click. Click here to subscribe. Do that. Okay. You need to figure out your best source of getting it out there is going to be trying to get people who are reading this to promote it and push it out towards other people. So every email you send out, your signature line, put in your signature line, hey, sign up here for my newsletter. On your Facebook, your Twitter, all that, click here, sign up for my newsletter, and blog. Blog, 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 blog. Every item you put in your newsletter, put on a blog. Put on a blog because it makes it discoverable. And when people are looking up this stuff, if they're looking up Brian Brushwood, Captain Murphy, and all this sort of stuff, and you will be surprised. Like, do you know how many times, even when we're not even, you know how many times weird things comes up when I'm doing words research for topics for weird things now? Because we're a pretty good resource on goblins in Africa and all this other stuff. And we do zero SEO optimization on our stuff. We do zero any of that, but we find ourselves frequently becoming asked about and approached by production companies and other people doing research because we've been talking about this for 10 years.
Sure, sure. Regularity definitely, definitely matters, and consistency of product definitely, definitely matters. And here's the weird part is people think that, okay, I've thought real hard about it. I'm ready to start episode one. In my mind, they think like, oh, episode one will blow up and then all the rest will be popular. That's not how it works at all. Understand that the first 40 to 60 episodes of literally anything you do will be seen by virtually nobody. And then only after that point will they go back. Now if it's evergreen content, it will go. People will go back and listen to it because they fall in love with it. But understand, you're not writing for the audience today. You're writing for the audience who will know you from a year from now.
It's funny when I start my Facebook Live videos, the first minute or two, I'm talking to the people who are going to watch the replay.
Yeah. Yeah,
because my view count is is zero for the first 30 seconds, then five or six the first couple minutes. After I get 15, 20 minutes in, it starts to blow up. But I will do the first couple minutes is I just leave a little message there for the people who are watching that version. And you know, we've had questions before like, hey, I want to do this thing, 100 things in 100 days. You get known by reputation, and to have reputation, you have to have a pattern. You know, if you want to be an extra and you want to be an extra on a top Star Trek show or whatever, have a reputation as a good extra. Have a reputation or some experience in that background, and that's who gets selected is that. Build a reputation, and reputation starts when nobody's looking.
That's a great quote. Reputation starts when nobody is looking. And that's very much what's funny to me is I at least thought, going back to the days of when I was doing Brian Brushwood on the Road, I thought, well, someday people will go back and watch these, and then they'll get seen. But much to my chagrin and surprise, they didn't. And instead, I think the most popular one of them is like 9,000 views or something like that. Instead, though, I've been able to revisit those topics and do them better the second time.
Yeah, it's... Watching the evolution of you and Justin as podcasters has been amazing. And I've made this point before, but I'm going to make it again, is I've been doing this Weird Things podcast with you guys, you know, every week, every Sunday for the last like 6 years or so.
Yeah, man. Maybe no longer than that because it was 2009.
Yeah,
7 years.
So, and you and Brian, you and Justin have been doing it for several years before. So, but my experience as a podcaster is sort of a Sunday hobby. I go do this podcast. When I watch you guys do your stuff and I see how smooth you are, I see how at ease you are with pauses and transitions and moving from topic to topic and telling people, it's a great example of, you know, take three people who started at relatively the same period of time, but it wasn't just the amount of time spent, it was the number of times up at bat, and I watch how much smoother you guys are.
Yeah,
And the
difference is don't feel like any first time or any individual time is special, because only one of two things will happen. Either the next thing you do will be a smash hit, in which case great, or nobody will care, in which case nobody will see it and nobody will ever hold it against you unless it's at a roast of you 30, 40, 50 years from now when they all know you from your good stuff and you're all laughing together at how bad this early stuff was.
Yeah, yeah. And then New Chiller Theater shows up out of somewhere. By the way, theater in America, we spell it depends. If you're talking about live theater, we do it R-E. If you're talking about a movie theater, we do it E-R, in case you were wondering, other people in other worlds. And that's not a hard rule.
Are you letting people in the chat have it? Is that what's going on?
No, there was a point because they talk about New Chiller Theater and what was the comment we addressed from the earlier one. And that was just E-R-R-E. And I always thought it was R-E for live and E-R for movie theater.
Yeah, I always thought one was the genre and the other was the place. I thought the physical place was theater.
Yeah, I like your definition better, Brian.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure somebody will correct us. When you do, send it to neshcom@gmail.com. Subject heading, Brian was wrong.
No, I'm writing now.
Put after things in there, too.
Sure.
Do we? You have any picks, Brian?
Yeah, I do, actually. And unfortunately, I can't speak to the specifics of it, but last night, just because I haven't gotten far enough in, Friday night was the book release party and signing for Ryan Holiday's new book, Ego is the Enemy. And if you want to, I'm just beginning this book. I would encourage you guys to go along with me. His book, The Obstacle is the Way, is a fantastic overview of Stoicism. He wrote the slightly more sensationalist titled Trust Me, I'm Lying. A fascinating, fascinating guy. I like him a lot. In Ego is the Enemy, the thing that got me really excited about this book is that he wrote the best breakdown of why Uber and Lyft are leaving Austin, Texas. And if you, I want to say it's in the Statesman or the Chronicle or the Observer. No, the Observer, I want to say. If you type in Ryan Holiday Observer, you should find it. But he goes through the fact that the Uber and Lyft thing leaving Austin has nothing to do with fingerprints. It has nothing to do with safety of people. It has nothing to do with protecting the interests of the protected monopoly that the cab companies have. Instead, it is quite simply a game of egos. It's Uber and Lyft thinking that they could come in and not back down and spend an unprecedented $20 million in advertising to buy legislation that they themselves wrote. And meanwhile, you have the heads of Austin City Council members who are making hay trying to claim that their lives at risk when really all they want to do is create a make work scheme that would do nothing to increase safety, but instead just make them look good on paper. And on top of all of that, our mayor is being an asshat, you know, playing it for votes and stuff. It's a fantastic article, and it has me super excited about reading his book, The Ego is the Enemy, because I do believe we all have to get out of the way of our egos.
You know, that's a very interesting point. And I can think of two salient examples of that. Was one of the things that Bill Gates's foundation wanted to do is they have this idea of like trying to helping people in other lesser developed countries. They want to donate chickens. They donate chickens so people can like start chicken farms, whatever, because chickens are an incredibly efficient source of protein. And some of the chicken stocks in other countries, by the way, aren't as good as the ones in first. That's another point, is like the and I don't know the overall generational thing, but like a chicken today, you know, like a modern factory farm chicken or chicken, or even a free range, produces far more meat than one did 20 years ago or 30 years ago, right? So the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, one of the plans they have was lesser developed countries was to donate chickens so people could start farming chicken and increase protein content, whatever. Big thing they've been trying to do in Africa to help if you give this to poor families there. Well, they offered to do this for Bolivia. And the president of Bolivia wrote this snarky sort of thing about how successful we are. We don't need your chicken handout. We don't need that, blah, 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 right? Which is because it affected Bolivian pride. Very, very, very prideful. And the idea that, you know, he's like, you don't need to know. And the fact of the matter is, yes, Bolivia's economy has been improving, blah, blah, blah. There are a lot of people there that could use these damn chickens. But because of this whole, it actually.
Oh, this was through Heifer International, too. That's one of my favorite charities.
Yeah. And so this is being, you know, the head of Bolivia, who sort of took this as a referendum on him and his leadership there, that we're poor or whatever, says, no, we don't need this and all that because our economy is doing really well. You know what? He's turning this down, refusing this purely out of ego, but also because the way it was handled could have been done better. It could have been done absolutely better.
Well, and that's certainly the case with Uber and Lyft in Austin. First of all, you know, I they could have had a conversation face to face, but it sounds like they didn't do that. And instead, they just went and they blew more money, 10 times more money than had ever been spent on any election initiative ever. And there were people, Austin is now in jeopardy of losing a $50 million grant because we don't really look like a tech savvy city anymore. So this future of tech grant doesn't really seem like a fit with Austin since we've kicked out Uber and Lyft and so on. So,
another example, Facebook in India. So Facebook had this idea of internet basics. Facebook wanted to provide basic internet service to lots of rural people. They wanted to increase internet there. And part of this was a Facebook program. And a program that would have a net positive, absolutely would increase the quality of life and everything around there. But because they came across as, hey, we're this, you know, we're this industry, this American internet giant, and we want to offer you our free basics kind of thing and all this sort of stuff, sharp react, partially from local, you know, local Indian companies that felt threatened and would have to compete with this. You know, there was a lot of behind the scenes sort of stuff. And one level, it's been put out there like, oh, well, they were arrogant in how they do it. There's a lot of players behind the scenes in India that like it the way they wanted it, the Bennett were. No, we like the system where it works to our advantage, not to yours or to the other people. It's a complicated thing, but part of it was messaging. It was absolutely so. Just reiterating your point about, you know, the idea of ego as the enemy is across the board, as you can see how things get shot down because, well, if I let you win this, then I get diminished and you're not going to get the thing. And all you really care is about getting – all Uber wants to do is have Uber in that city. But for the politicians there, you know, like, nah, we're going to show that, you know, we can make deals and we can handle this and da-da-da. And what do you have?
Yeah, that's –
expensive to get a ride there now.
Yes, exactly. Well, and also inarguably less safe because now you have to use a Facebook group where nobody's vetted. There's, you know, you just have to do under the basically, as often happens, it drives a need into the black market. I'm really excited to read this book. I think it'll be really good.
So I have a pick.
Yes.
Kind of a suggestion, a recommendation. I had a magical experience last night.
go on. Is this appropriate for after things?
You know, I would say that I've had certain boundaries in my life and certain barriers and certain phobias and certain, like, biases, we'll call them.
I mean, that's just the way you were raised. I feel like you can overcome this.
You know, it's weird. It gets deeper and darker because I once learned a secret about my father that had to make me rethink a lot of things.
Did it open up new doors once you realized it?
Bryce, is it possible to pull up just the photo from my Twitter stream? Just my photo from my Twitter stream. For those of you who don't know, there's a thing in L.A. It's called Brooklidge, and what it is, it's a theater in the back of this mansion that's the founders of the Magic Castle. They have a 40-seat theater, a neat little theater. They do vaudeville shows periodically, invitation-only kind of things, but I'm friends with Erica Larson, who puts these on, and they bring in really cool, amazing variety acts there, whatever. I donated for a chair there once just to sort of make sure that I – just the photo, not anything else, just the photo. Just to zoom into the photo. Just zoom into the photo. And Brian, what do you see in this photo?
I mean, I see you and another copy of you in clown makeup. Like, well, you guys look virtually identical.
So I've had a bit of a clown phobia. Not a fan of clowns.
Sure.
And I would say because there are degrees of clowning. There are some people who put on makeup and just sort of do stupid things and become annoying. There are some people who put on makeup to play with children, which is fearful. I found out when I was a young man, my father actually used to dress up as a clown and do diving board stunts, you know, in college.
Wow.
My dad was a diving board stunt clown before he became a police officer and, you know, his career there. So I've had a mixed history of that. Maybe at one point as a child, I tried clown makeup or whatever, but it wasn't a thing for me. But I would say that I have some friends who are clowns, but I also kind of think that they're kind of the ones, some of them are, they're really lovely people, but they're annoying. Last night at Brooklidge, there was a great show. We had Neil Hamburger came on and did a set, which was hilarious. And then I had heard of him. I had never seen him. I wasn't quite sure what to expect. I saw Puddles the Clown. Puddles Pity Party.
It's amazing to me. Like, I have seen this guy show up in a bunch of different things, but I still don't know what he does. Does he have a stage show?
Yes.
Does he like I've seen him collaborate on you know, doing audio for live acoustic music sets and stuff.
Puddles is a 6'8" clown who sings beautifully. Wonderful baritone voice. Puddles doesn't speak, but will sing. And Puddles puts on a stage show and goes through these efforts of dragging out a chair for somebody to sit on, like it's the most heavy thing in the world, and sit somebody down and then belts out Happy Birthday wonderfully. And then goes out being, he's just this big, sad clown. And when he sings, video plays behind him of stuff like he was doing. I forget what song it was. You know, it was one of these things about, you know, having to get up and keep going. And it's all this footage of all those robots, all the robot competitions of the robots falling and tripping over themselves.
Oh.
It is. He's got a wonderful voice and an amazing presentation. If you go to look up Puddles Pity Party, you can see him. And as a clown, his character is so well developed and, you know, personified. And then when he sings, everybody's into it. Everybody is so into it. You love him. You trust him. You're fully on board with it. At some point, you know, he rocks out in the audience and he grabs somebody's iPhone as they're recording it and he hands it to somebody else who's got an iPhone. He just starts switching everybody's phones around, right? Creating havoc, but people start pulling out their phones so they'll switch it. So he'll switch their phones because they want to be part of it. And you think about, like, you talk about magicians, like, oh, you know, you do a thing where you borrow a ring. Like, what if they won't give me a ring? You should reconsider your profession if people don't trust you.
Yeah, sure, you know? Sure.
You know, and that's for this. So
by the way, that's a really good example, because most of the people who are fans of Scam School, when they ask for advice, they're all like, well, what do I do if they just grab the cards out of my hand and then they realize it's a trick deck? And then it's like, then you learn how to be a magician, because one of the core requirements is that you be the kind of person that can command a presence that nobody would dare even think of snatching the cards out of your hand.
Yeah, mine are actually like, what if somebody grabs my phone out of my hand and starts to run down the street? I don't know. I punch them in the head. I would never punch them in the head who grabbed the cards out of my hand. But I've had drunk people who are like, you know, who just out of the control. And I just stare at them. Like, what do you do when somebody does something extremely stupid and socially unacceptable in front of you? Think about this. After Puddles left, Puddles' manager, a friend came in who's also 6'8", by the way, just coincidentally, shaved head. No relation to Puddles, I'm sure, other than, you know, he's a person that who assists Puddles. Wherever Puddles is, this other person will sometimes show up after Puddles has departed. If you get what I'm saying?
Sorry, say again.
So I'm saying Puddles left at the party, and then a little while later, another 6'8" person came in and joined the party.
That seems highly coincidental, but
yeah, I mean, whose name's Mike Gain, I think, who's it was the one who discovered Puddles when Puddles came into his bar.
Oh, well, no, that's good. That's really good. Got it. Yeah.
Look up Puddles about. You'll see that like Puddles. That. Puddles' friend Mike, you know, was sometimes a lot of places. Puddles, Mike is there with.
Well, I mean, of course, he's his manager.
Something like that. Yeah. So what was fascinating to me was that there were some other people at the party who like are like professional entertainers who are always on, always in costume, always on. And then once Puddles left and this other person came there, Puddles was the third person. Thought Puddles was this other sort of entity. That separation, you know, the difference between persona and character, you know, this is a character, this is a persona that I always assume and I always live. And it was a very, very interesting observation for me to realize how there was a separation there. And the person who maybe was Puddles, maybe some people might think was Puddles is his own person, but somebody you might confuse for that. There clearly was no evidence that that was, because Puddles was a very different person than this other person.
Sure, sure.
And I learned more in watching those vignettes, those character, those little moments about character on stage. Puddles, we only know who Puddles was through song and his actions. And my advice to magicians, two things to think about, or any kind of entertainer, like for magicians in particular, is if you want to find out who you are, one, get rid of all of your props, all your standards, grab a bunch of just random magic props, random things you've never done with, and put together a show in a hurry. Two, if you have a trick, something you want to do, don't write a script, act right out of pantomime.
My God, I'm so happy to hear you say that, because that's how I felt. Was like, yeah, we've talked before where it's like, you know, decades ago, I worked with a partner and he was very much of the mindset of like, no, everything must be written. And I'm like, no, it's in us. We have to let it out by getting out there. And in the white hot fleeting terror of being in front of a crowd, whatever we hide behind in that moment is the true us. Let's mm-hmm. discover that. And there's only one way to get there.
Yeah, and you can after you iterate, you can then write down and put together that thing together. But when you sit in a room with a blank page and you know, a big part of theater is you say, yes, what are, you know, if you're writing theater, is how do I get from point A to point B? How does this happen? And you don't know until you try the experience to do that. And I think if you're trying to create your character and trying to create a way to do that, one is where do you want to go with it? And then refine that and throw out the bad ideas and keep the good ones and keep going over. And it's, I mean, it's okay to start with something like a threadbare sort of thing, but my best lines, my best material was stuff that came about organically. And then when it comes to, and you know, from, you know, one, have a sense of play, you know, that helps. But then two, you know, what do you do when you actually want to do a trick? Like, I'm a big believer, like, how would you do the trick without words? How, write a script without words. How would you do this? How would you communicate every single moment? So then when you do say something, it matters and you're not talking to fill the air.
Well, and if you can't do that, then what if you were allowed one word every 10 seconds? What would those 10, what would those words be? And so on. There's creative exercises that can get you to the right headspace for all that. But man, I got nothing but respects for, respect for. So, geez, we're going to run long here, but it's like, I love the fact that in some ways variety art is dead in that nobody wants to go see someone in person, but on the other, but in other words, in other ways, variety art has never been more accessible and more beloved by more people thanks to YouTube.
Yeah, but also, like, I yesterday I went and I saw a live show at the Fringe. I saw my friend Simon Cornell, who's a wonderful entertainer's office, on his way now to Australia to do the Australian Fringe. I watched him do that in the middle of, we had the Fringe Festival in LA where there's a ton of variety stuff. That night I went to Brooklidge and I saw some incredible stuff. I think there's, I think that the two feed off of each other now. I think that YouTube can help that. I can go tell people, like, oh my God, you got to see Puddles. Watch the, look at these YouTube clips and then go see the show. It's not just I watch this guy sing a song. It's the context of everything out there, else out there through there. So I think maybe it's more alive now than ever. And then in the last 20 years, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. A lot of Fringe festivals now. Austin has a Fringe, right?
Oh, sure, 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 sure. I mean, yeah. It depends by what definition, right? It's like we don't have very many variety performers, superstars that become synonyms like the word Houdini. But on the flip side, we also have people who are able to sit in their living room and do some virtuosic skill and become world famous overnight.
Yeah, it is an interesting thing where the only two things that can tour now really is on a large scale is music acts, and then on a much smaller scale is theater plays through major markets, you know, yeah. And then secondary markets. If you can put it in the context of a play or theater, then you can do that. But yeah, certainly, you know, we would be, I don't, nobody right now could name a famous juggler, you know.
Or the most famous juggler. Like, let's try. Bryce, who is the most famous juggler?
Oh, the fantastic Mr. Juggle Hands.
BRB, registering your trademark.
yeah, I mean, there's you know, we can think like Michael Motion and stuff, other generation stuff. And
but again, that's what I'm saying is nowadays it's not as obvious. You can't own a category by being dominant because everyone just needs, you know, to know the one. That's amazing.
And there are, you know, and the problem I think has been like, there's a lot of amazing like comedians and visual stuff like Tape Face and other stuff out, people like there out there. And the problem is sort of that I think the beautiful thing about America's Got Talent is it certainly put stuff in front of there. The problem with America's Got Talent is it's taken some fantastic great acts and then present them as amateurs with only 2 or 3 minutes of material, when in fact these are sometimes people who have hour-long, fantastic, amazing shows that are doing killer performances, standing ovation, and fringe festivals and places.
Sure.
But in that medium, you don't get that.
No,
you don't
get that. And that's because they only have room for one narrative, which, to be honest, I'm so fascinated with this phenomenon. Maybe we could put a pin in it right now and we could come back to it next week on After Things, because I feel like we couldn't possibly do it justice in the time we have left.
Listen, it's been after.
Sure has.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.